You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Coming up on episode 267 of Wheel Bearings, we've got the Jeep Wagoneer L, the 2024 Chevy Trax, emotional ties up with Uber, GM Energy is formed, and we get stuck in the Ford Bronco Raptor. All that and more coming up next. Hey, everybody. We're in the process of lining up some new sponsors for the show, and we need a little bit of information about who listens to the show. So if you've got a couple of minutes to spare, if you can go to survey.wheelbearings.media and answer a few questions, that would really help us out. Thanks. This is episode 267 of Wheel Bearings. I'm Sam Abul Samad from Guidehouse Insights.
I am Nicole Wakelin from the Fast Women Podcast.
And I am Roberto Baldwin from, let's say, Engadget this week.
All right. And as things worked out with our schedules, we're actually recording this one only 2 days after we recorded the last one. But yes, you won't hear it for several more days yet because of upcoming embargoes, and all three of us are doing a bunch of travel. So we've got limited stuff to talk about as far as what we drove, but I'm going to start with the Ford Bronco Raptor, which I've had for the last several days.
Was that a, what was that?
It's a raptor. It's a raptor. Just woken up. It's a raptor, and I made little raptor hands.
He did make nice little raptor hands that went with that, guys. He did make the visual to go with a little roar.
So the Bronco Raptor is a Bronco, but more. Bigger engine, 3-liter twin turbo V6. I think it's about 450 horsepower. It's 10 inches wider. The suspension's all different from the standard Bronco for a lot of extra track and to accommodate standard 37 inch beadlock wheels that come from the factory and bigger fenders and everything. It looks like a Bronco on steroids. In most ways, it's very impressive. But if you're interested in fuel economy, this is not the vehicle for you.
Not impressive.
The regular Raptor, you're like, what's the fuel economy? Whoa, let's slow down. Look at the tire on the back.
Yeah.
Isn't that cool?
when it was first, a couple hours after it was first delivered, I had to take it to go to a lunch meeting in Birmingham, Michigan, which is about an hour away from me here. And mostly highway driving, and it averaged about 15 and a half miles per gallon, which, you know,
in the year of our Lord 2022,
yes,
a heck of a lot of money.
Yes. But you know, the ride quality was surprisingly good given how high up this thing sits and have big tires and everything it has on it. It was the driving dynamics were definitely a lot better than I haven't driven the current generation F-150 Raptor yet, but the previous generation felt really soft and floppy. And when you went around corners, it kind of wandered around. This one is much more tied down, feels much more like driving the Jeep Gladiator Mojave, so kind of it's clearly targeted more for, you know, high speed desert running than necessarily driving on off-road trails. But that said, there are some ORV parks, some off-road vehicle parks here in Michigan. And yesterday I opted to go try out the Bronco Raptor there to see what it could really do.
How'd it go, Sam?
It sounds exciting. It sounds like you had the best day.
It went really well
ever.
Until it didn't.
Oh.
That's how all off-roading and track days go.
I have a couple of pictures from you on my phone that tell me that the day took a definite turn.
Oh, yeah. So
I was like, is that Sam or somebody he's else? I'm like,
so on sand and rocks and on dry trails, it's fantastic. Although it is wide. The place I went to is this place called the Mounds ORV Park. It's northeast of Flint. The trails that have been cut through this park, it's like several hundred acres of park and forest, it's all forest. And the trails are mostly have been naturally cut over the years by the people that go there. So you've got these through like over some of the hills, you've got, trails that cut through there. And it's basically like going through a little mini canyon. And it just barely fit through there, but it did fit. I got it through everywhere.
That's as long as it fits.
Yeah, no, got through everywhere. I think definitely a Hummer EV would not have fit. But the Bronco Raptor did fit everywhere that I tried to take it. Some places it fit a little too well. It was a very snug fit. But the problem I ran into and what I learned the hard way yesterday is that, when they put all-terrain tires on a vehicle, all-terrain tires, you can think of them kind of like all-season tires. They are master of all, or jack of all trades and master of none. That's kind of what these were. Big 37-inch Goodyear or Goodrich TA, off-road or all-terrain tires, KO2s, they're as long as whatever the surface is relatively dry, like whether it's boulders or logs, or just a dirt trail, you're good. You definitely do not want to go in the mud with these things.
Womp.
If it's a shallow, puddle, puddle, fine. But in when it gets muddy, these tires are not good. I mean, like really, really not good. They basically, you get in, and if it's like a sticky mud,
for the mud. If the mud is trying to trap people,
well, yes, and that's what it did. It just got in there, and it would just sit there and spin all four tires.
Like if you could have seen this picture, Sam sends you. He's like, "Hey, look!" And it's like him crawling over rocks. I'm like, "That's awesome." He's like, "Things not so good now." And it's like him stuck in the mud in the next picture. I'm like, "Ooh, what's gone wrong here?"
Something's gone sideways.
Hell yes, and it definitely went sideways. It got into the mud and. Yeah, I mean the Raptor, I think its fording depth is like 30 or 32 inches, something like that. So I mean it has no problem with water as long as the surface underneath the water is comparatively solid. But as soon as those tires start to bite into the mud, they just stick. And this was like, I think it was a very clay soil underneath there. So I mean
it's like a silt.
Yes. And when I got out, to survey the situation and then, go for assistance, I stepped into this mud and just sunk down almost to my knees.
Oh my God.
In the muck.
Was
underneath.
It just you? Who was with you? Was it
just
you?
Me.
Oh my God.
There were other people in the park.
There's less embarrassment but when you're by yourself, you're just like, but when you're with someone, I'm a professional car driver guy.
There was a bunch of other people using the park. Mostly like people on dirt bikes and ATVs and stuff, but there were a couple other, SUVs. And fortunately I met this really nice, older couple, with like a late 80s XJ Cherokee, which clearly they, you know, and they, we were chatting and, you know, they live like 15 minutes from there and they go there all the time. And they, you know, they were clearly prepared for what was there because they had the tires on their Cherokee were like, you know, these big, like tractor tires with the big ridges. And in fact, he was telling me, you know, the tires he's got are actually, non-directional. So the tread on each side.
Oh, so there's no groove. There's no like groove you can build. It's
right. So if, regardless of whether the tire is going forward or back, it can get some grip in there. And if you're going to go anywhere where there's mud with a Bronco Raptor, you definitely want tires, something like that. And, you know, fortunately they had, you know, they had a winch, on there and, you know, I got out, I trekked back to the parking area and I was going to call for a tow truck, to help me out. And they came along, and I, you know, I asked them, hey, you know, can I pay you, you know, to help winch me out of the mud? Yeah. And they said, yeah, sure. No problem. Come on, you know, hop in, let's go. And, you know, they were really nice and, you know, didn't ask for anything. But I just wanted to give them a shout out. So thank you very much for your help.
Thank you. Nice people who saved Sam. We needed him today. We appreciate it.
Yeah.
I mean, you could still podcast from the truck. I mean, you had wife, that's you true. Had a connection.
Literally.
Where
it's
are you?
Day three in the Raptor.
Day great. Three in the Raptor stuck in the mud down to one cheese stick and a box of crackers.
Yeah, so there are definite limits to what you can do. You know, as amazing as the suspension is on this thing, you know, and it's got these fancy, remote reservoir dampers and everything on there, and big beefy suspension, you know, cast aluminum control arms, and you know the big tires and everything. What it ultimately always comes down to is the tires. You know, it's the interface between the vehicle and whatever it is you're driving on, whether that is a road, a trail, or a mud bog. You know, it always comes down to the tires. And you know, if you don't have the right tires for the job, nature will win. Every single
nature
time,
finds a way.
120% of the time, yep. Nature will find a way to beat you if you don't have the right tires. Yep. So, you know, whether it's driving in winter weather conditions, you want winter tires. Great. You know, don't go with all seasons. If you can avoid it, get winter tires. If it come, you know, if it's, you know, driving through a trail where there's going to be muddy ponds, and you know, this pond was not that, you know, this puddle, it looked more like a puddle when I saw it. I said, oh, I can get through that. I mean, it was maybe, it was literally, you know, barely
thing.
Twice the length of the vehicle, you know? So, I mean,
is
it was
it
not,
always, it never looks as bad as it
is. It actually, unless like, you, unless I can you, do that. Oh, wait.
Unless you get out and like walk into it and see, you know, and feel yourself sink into the muck. And then you realize, okay, I better go this way instead. And, yeah, so I learned. I'll definitely be going back there again, but I know what areas to avoid now.
No, it's I when I had the R1T, I took it up to Hollister. It's an off road park here in Northern California. It's great. It's got I don't know how many miles, but lots of miles of road. And we were driving around. We're doing a video shoot, and we're driving past where you do the rock crawling. And there's these. It's rainy. And there's these three gentlemen, they're up there with their, you know, their Ford, you know, their Tundra and their 4Runner, and, you know, they're all tricked out. And they haven't gone past this one point. I'm like, I wonder what's going on. And so we go up there, and the vehicle, you know, it's got four motors, it's all-wheel drive. And we get up there, and what it is there's a thin layer of silt over hard pack.
Oh, God.
And so it's like driving on ice.
Mm-hmm.
And the wheels are just like immediately get like filled with silt. And so we're driving and just sliding all over the place. And I realize that there's a camber to the road. And if we keep going and I'm like, okay, where am I going to turn around? Cause I can't turn around here because I'll just slide into a gulch. And again, it all comes down to like, okay, well, what are the wheels that I have or the tires that I have right now? Okay, this is an inappropriate use of these tires. Let me turn around and go back to the other off-roading part where it's not like this, and I'll be fine. But yeah, you just can't think, oh, I got all-wheel drive, I got an off-road vehicle, I'm just gonna go for it. Like, oh, hold on, I know you just got it from the factory or from the showroom, but get an off-road friend.
Yes.
Call Emmy Hall. Ask her what she.
There you go.
Call Emmy Hall, and she'll just tell you whatever you want you to know.
Some things I really did appreciate about the Bronco, and this is not exclusive to the Raptor, is when you're in off-road modes, it can keep the cameras on at speeds up to about 20 miles an hour. Whereas, you know, when you're on road, the Federal Motor Vehicle Safety Standards require the cameras to shut off at about 4 or 5 miles an hour. And so for off-roading, you know, you have the front camera and you have the surround view cameras, and you can get multiple views, which especially when you're on your own, you know, and you're going through these, if you don't have a spotter and you're going through these tight spaces, to be able to see what's down in front, especially you're going over a hump and you don't know what's on the other side. You know, having that camera that can show you, oh, that's what's over there. I think I'm going to back up and go the other way instead. You know, that is really, really helpful. And, you know, the various goat modes that they have, the off-road and, the rock crawl and so on, are also really helpful on this thing. One thing that I noticed, especially after I got into the Jeep with that couple, that I did find a little bit annoying, and this is not a complaint exclusive to the Bronco. But you know, because the Bronco doesn't have a manual shift between four high and four low, like you do in a lot of older vehicles. And in fact, you know, even modern Jeeps, like the Wrangler does have that. You know, it's an electronic shift, you know, so you've got that knob on the console.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And so you've got to stop, put it in neutral, and then press the four low button to get it into four low. And, you know, then you've got to wait, you know, it takes a little while before it executes all this stuff. Yeah. Whereas, you know, with a manual system, you still have to stop, you know, when you shift from four high to four low, but you know, the guy was shifting between four high and four low much more quickly than I could, with the Bronco.
So you have momentum. So it's like when you get stuck, like a lot of times you want to like either rock or bounce the vehicle to sort of get it out. And that's where I'm like, when we don't get manual transmissions for off-roading, like you can't really do that sort of rocking thing.
That rock back and forth. Yeah,
it's hard you to can't do that rock back and forth that we used to do as kids when you get like cars that were definitely not made to go off-road, but we would get them out.
That didn't stop us.
Yeah, that didn't stop us because we had manual transmissions. You could rock it, you can cram it in the high, you can cram it in the low real quick. And then we probably broke a lot of transmissions.
Possibly.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Maybe one or two.
Details.
It was the 80s and early 90s. No, there were no rules.
So the Bronco Raptor starts at like 73,400, something like that. Mine was about $79,400.
Oh my god!
And let's have the destination charge guess.
Ooh. It's 1,300.
1,295.
Robbie gets it again. 1595.
Yes. Dang it. Really? 1595. Yeah. Oh, even when I went under, he's so sneaky.
You got to go under, Robbie. That's the rule.
I did. I went 1295.
I went you got under, too. Score. You didn't.
I was under, too.
Yeah.
I didn't think it would be that much. I probably should have known better.
Yeah. So, you know, a nearly $80,000 SUV. And if you're going to take it anywhere, and, you know, granted, you know, probably 95% of the people that buy these will never actually go off-roading with it. Which is
you know, some nice light off-roading.
Yeah. You know, it'll be a gravel driveway, things like
that.
There'll
be a dirt road in their future somewhere. Yeah.
But you know, they're probably never gonna take it to a place like the mountains. If you are gonna take it somewhere like that or somewhere, you know, where there's mud or you know, deep slushy snow, because same thing, I've had the same thing happen before in slushy snow. You know, these all-terrain tires, not good in those conditions. They're great on dry stuff. You know, running across the desert, you know, across the Mojave, you know, no problem at all. Doing the Baja 1000, not a problem at all. But if you get into the muddy stuff or slushy or snow stuff, you're gonna be in trouble unless you get some different, very different tires.
Water always wins.
Yes, that's true. It does. That is, I mean, that's where you think the Grand Canyon came from.
Yeah, water always wins.
One other complaint I do have about this, you know, it's got the spare tires mounted on the tailgate, and then you've got like this little gooseneck thing with the center rear brake lamp that comes up over the top of that. when you're in the driver's seat, that basically blocks about three quarters of the view out the rear window. So Ford really should put a digital camera mirror system in the Bronco Raptor. I mean, you know, for $80,000, you know, go ahead and do that.
Yeah,
so you can see what's behind you.
Do that.
Yeah.
Also those things need, what is it? A diop? What's the thing where you can change the focus on your camera? Like your DSLR.
Oh, I know what you're talking about, but I have no idea what it's called.
The focal length or the.
No, there's just so your eyes, like, oh, if you're farsighted.
Yeah.
For focusing. Yeah. I think those things need to be on those rear view camera things.
I don't know that you can actually do that though, because you're not looking at a reflection.
If you just change the focus of it,
it's just going to be blurred all the time.
No, there's got to be a way to do that. Yeah. There's got to be somebody who can.
Because with a reflection, you're actually focusing on what's behind you rather than the.
Yeah,
the surface.
So you have infinity focus when you're looking at reflection, when you're looking at the thing. So you should be able, because the same thing. If I look in my camera, like I can adjust it so it's like out of focus for regular people. But as I get older and I ended up taking some medication once that like messed up my eyes for the rest of my life. So like my nearsightedness, if I get tired, I can't see very well. They need that, because more and more people are, you know, the population is getting older.
Yeah.
We have fewer young people than we have old people. And for the old, like myself, that would, you know, eventually it's going to be worse because, you know, you get old and your eyes just like, forget it.
Yeah,
but even though the rear brake light thing is blocking your view, it does give you another view though, because when you look at it, when you see it in the mirror, you can see the word Raptor debossed on the plastic. And when you open up the tailgate, you look at it, you see it's actually a mirror image of it. So that when you see it in the mirror, you see it the right way.
Yeah. That's cool.
I mean, I'd rather actually see what's behind me.
Whatever. But if you can't see what's behind you, cool little logo is a great alternative.
My friend had a 68 Mustang Fastback. I think it was a 68. I feel like if it was 69, we would have been giggling about it the entire time. It had the high beam, low beam signal was a little Mustang. And when you made it high beam, it like would turn red. And so
really?
A little horse,
oh, that's cool.
A little horse would light up. And I was like, this is the coolest thing I've ever seen in any car. Excellent. It didn't matter anything. The car was a piece of, it looked great, but it wasn't a great car. It broke down all the time. You know, it was an old, you know, you know, I had a Honda Civic at the time. So they were like, we're all taking your car because our cool looking car broke down. But that was like, I was like, oh, I got to figure out how to do that in my Honda with the little Honda symbol. I'm sure there's probably some regulatory issue why you can't do that now, but
probably
those little touches though, those make all the difference.
Yep. All right.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Did you know you can support Wheel Bearings directly? Head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia and you can become a patron today. Your contributions will help fund the platforms and tools we use to bring the podcast to you. And exclusives and improvements are already on the way thanks to your generosity. So if you want to be part of an automotive podcast like no other, head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia. Nicole.
Yes.
Your turn.
My turn. Okay, so I'm going to talk about
cool.
Something. Woohoo! And I sound terrible because I have a cold. So let's see how much I cough through this. But so last week I was in Nashville and I drove the Nissan Ariya. See, already it's out. Forget it. Too much cold meds. So I drove the Ariya, which is their new EV. Now, it's been around actually, like, I think the first drives of this, really. Did you do this, Robbie, in Spain?
I did. I went to Spain. Yeah. And I flew all the way to Spain.
Right.
And it wasn't ready for, like, public roads.
Uh-huh.
So what they did is they set up a track in Spain. And we weren't doing, like, track laps. We weren't doing laps at the track. What they did is they set up little scenarios on the track. Like, this is what it would be like if you were at a stoplight.
Oh, my
and this
gosh.
Is like a chicane. And this is a roundabout. And this is a mountain road. And so you would be driving. And then, like, there'd be all these cones set up and little, like, signs and everything. And then you do the little thing like you were driving around.
Oh,
and
geez.
It was raining like crazy, like, half the time. But it. But it's not like driving on a road,
right?
Obviously. But
the
it was
same
a nice.
All.
It was like a little appetizer.
Appetizer. Well, we got yeah. the
and
we
I
got
drove
the main course.
I drove that track like 30 times. I feel like because I'm like I'm already here in Spain. I'm not gonna drive it once and be like, oh, it's good enough. Nope,
that's
I'm
good,
just gonna
I'm
keep
done.
Going.
Well, we had a nice lengthy drive outside Nashville. We just did the front wheel drive. There is an all wheel drive version of it, but it's coming later, so they didn't have that. And there's also long range and short range batteries. There is a trim lineup that I find redonkulously confusing. Like it's like engage and then engage e-force. And then there's the engage plus e-force, which is the, yeah, seven, eight, however many fingers Robbie's
there's
holding
eight.
Up.
Like, there's eight.
And the names is like, they don't, the all-wheel drive ones are called the e-force ones. And I want to make that its own trim. Like, no, that just means it's the same thing. They just added all-wheel drive and the plus means it's longer. It's like, I find it confusing.
Yeah.
So trim lineup, hate it, but the car I really liked. I thought it drove really nicely. It's kind of upscale for a Nissan. Like I felt like it was a really nice interior. It looks
the interior is so nice.
Yeah. Like, and it's not like Nissan has bad interiors, but they don't have particularly like stunning interiors, I guess.
Yeah.
And this one felt to me like it was better than a typical Nissan. Like they stepped up their game. So I really give them a lot of credit for that. There's a couple features that I really, 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 really liked. So the center console, there's a button on the side of it and it slides forward and it slides backwards. Did you play with that, Robbie?
A little bit, yeah. It's so,
Hyundai
it's
does that too on the Ioniq 5. You can slide
yeah,
the console
I love it. See a little
back.
Slide over. But then there's another button. So if you look under the dashboard, it looks very plain. Like you don't see any like glove box or anything. But if you push again on a different button on the center console, there's this little drawer that pops open and comes out from like the center of the dashboard. Whoop, and it has a little lid.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And you can push the lid back and there's a decent amount of storage in there. Like you can stick a good amount of stuff in and you can open it or close it as far or as little as you want. So if you just want it open a little bit, if you want it fully open. And they said like when it stopped, that little drawer cover that goes on top of it, there's this little cover you just push back with your hand. You could use it as a table. So say you're sitting there and you're stopped and you're having your McDonald's lunch on the go or whatever. You have like a little table surface there, which is kind of nice. Put your Filet-O-Fish on there or your McRib if you're insane. And
or maybe
McRibs.
Some crumble cookies.
Or crumble cookies.
Crumble cookies.
I feel like, I should do it like sizing like golf clubs in a thing. I feel like it could only... How many crumble cookies? I feel like this could hold perhaps 3 crumble cookies. Not quite 4, but you'd have to have like one on towards the front and like 2 towards the back, like a little triangle. You could probably fit 3 crumble cookies.
We need a new
string.
Unit of measurement beyond.
That's my unit of measurement now. For
golf clubs.
There we go. How many?
The golf
clubs cookies?
Unit of measurement because it does. I'm like, I don't know. I don't golf. But
I know.
There has to be enough people who golf that automakers keep telling us this. And I'm like, how many people
what
golf?
No,
better,
you, you know,
be
you know who golfs?
Thing than golf clubs.
Automaker executives.
But what would be our standard? Like, okay, if we weren't going to do golf clubs,
I do my inflatable paddleboard.
Inflatable
okay.
I think and if it fits in there.
What do you call it? The thing you take on the airplane?
Roller
that
bags?
rolling
things.
On. You're rolling,
I feel like
you're
that's
rolling
a more common
bag.
One. Most people know the little rectangular roller
no
bag.
One wants. No one wants to pay to like check a bag if they can help it. So everyone
or wait
has...
for an hour and risk their bag being lost.
It
yeah,
should
their
be
bag
in roller
being lost.
Bags. Yeah.
It should be in roller bags. This that is how this is the unit of
measurement. 2 roller bags wide, 3 roller bags roller across. Bags that would totally resonate with 90% of the population.
Yeah, everyone's but, like, oh yeah, yeah. Oh, okay. I understand
I know
what a roller
how big
bag
it is now.
Is.
So so Ariya, I liked it. I like the little features. I like the sliding center console. I like that little deployable dash storage. The one negative is the charging. It doesn't charge as quickly as, say, the Ioniq 5 and EV6. I'm drawing a blank. I believe it's 130 kilowatt charging in the Aria, which is like a little on the lower side.
And today times.
Exactly. And, you know, honestly, like when you drove it.
At least 150.
Yeah, and when you drove it back in whatever, Robbie, April? I mean, if it had maybe been coming out in April, maybe it would have not felt as slow as it feels now in October, where you're looking at what's out there and what's coming out, and you're like, that's kind of slow. And I mean, granted, you can't take advantage of some of the fastest charging because not all the chargers support that, but still.
And even when they nominally support that, you know, they often don't work.
If you get like 200 and you get to a 350 and you're getting like 170, you're like, all right, this is cool. That's fine.
Right. Yeah.
But if you got like 140 and you're at a 150 and you're getting like 110 or you're getting like 70, you're like, oh.
Right. And the most you can ever get is 130 on this. So, I mean, you might not even get that. Excuse me. You might only get, like you said, 70, but the most you can ever get is 130. So I think that's probably the biggest drawback, that and the fact, and this is the case with, like, I think every new EV that's out there, the reservations are full for this. You can't currently reserve one. You might get lucky and find one that's not spoken for on a dealer's lot. Maybe, kind of.
When are they actually going to start delivering these?
I believe deliveries are starting relatively soon. I don't have that in front of me, Sam. I'm sorry. I didn't write that down. But I know the front wheel drive ones are definitely, like, those are coming first. If you're looking for all wheel drive, better make sure that your old car holds on for just a little bit longer, because that one's going to be a bit out there. But I feel like the front wheel drives are coming pretty soon.
Did you have a chance to drive the e-Force vehicle?
No,
because like they had a Leaf. They had a Leaf in Spain that had e-Force on it.
Oh no, we did
really,
not.
It was really nice. It was I was really impressed. I'm really happy that Nissan, like, you know, an automaker that, you know, in the 90s and in the 80s was like, yeah, you know, hard body trucks and the Nissan Sentra, which was sort of, you know, everyone had the red Nissan Sentra sedan.
Right.
You know, that was a big deal. And then the last like 10, 15 years, not so much, but you know, they have the Kicks, they have the Z, they have the Aria.
I feel like they're doing good. What I like about the Aria is I'm hoping that this is where Nissan continues to go with the quality of its interior and the features and the style. Like if this is a preview of where we can expect new Nissans to go as they're refreshed or as they're all new or as new models are introduced, I think that bodes really very well for the brand, because it's really good. The interior is good. I like it.
One downside, all the Arias for now are going to be built in Japan, which means no eligibility for clean vehicle credits.
Right.
So you will have to pay full freight.
Womp, womp.
Womp, womp. Yeah. That's unfortunate.
Everyone's moving factories or opening factories quicker in the United States.
They're trying, but it's not something you can do in two seconds.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm guessing we'll see Nissan
just throw a tent up
at production of the Aria either in Smyrna or Canton, Mississippi in the next 2 years. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Jobs for people. J-O-Bs, as the kids say.
And I get to try hot chicken because it was in Nashville. So I was really excited. I got to have some Nashville hot chicken while I was there, which makes me happy.
You'll have to have some more this week to clear your
I know. Misses. I know, right?
Yeah, we'll both be in Nashville this week for the Toyota Crown.
Toyota Corolla, Toyota Highlander. I feel like there's more.
So many.
I think it's just those
Toyota
three.
Just
those three.
Toyota's like, how many cars can we shove into it?
And how many cars can we put into 3-day drive?
There's so many events that I'm not allowed to go on anymore. I did a really good job not traveling in September, but like October, I'm like, okay, well, now I don't have a lot of money.
So now I must travel.
And I keep bringing things up. My wife's like, no. You're going to where and where and where, and now you want to go where? I'm like,
No, you may not.
No, I added a car to the thing.
You added a car to the thing.
What did you add?
I added the EQS SUV, the Mercedes-Benz SUV. I forgot that I drove it because it was weeks ago, and it was when I couldn't do the podcast, and so I remembered after you talked about going off road that I took the EQS SUV, the Mercedes-Benz SUV of EQS's. So it's really, it's a weird
Their new naming convention with their EVs is if it was possible is even more confusing than their old naming convention when they only had internal combustion engines.
Yeah, it was like the S blah 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 numbers.
Yeah,
and you're like, what's it's the C.
Well, they had the you know, just one letter for the sedans, and then GL and a letter for the SUVs.
V's.
Yeah, and now instead of GLS EQ, yeah, you know, or something like that, it's EQS SUV.
So, it could be EQ. No, I guess you're. Yeah, it's that's what happens when you're like, okay, stake in the ground, this is what we're doing. And you had like e-tron, and then they had the e-tron. Then they had the e-tron. They had the e-tron and then the e-tron.
Yeah.
and then
the e-tron GT.
And then the e-tron GT.
And now the Q4 e-tron.
Q4 e-tron. Like, wait, is it four? I remember having to call them and ask or email them and like hold or talk to them about video for the, because I drove the RS e-tron GT. And I was like, wait, where does the RS go?
Is it e-tron GT RS or e-tron RS GT or RS GT?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was in the snow in Canada standing in front of a camera and I'm like, wait, and walking over to the Audi representative. I'm like, wait, where does RS go in the naming of this vehicle? So when I say it on, is it R? He's like, RS starts and then you go e-tron. Okay. Anyway, back to the EQS SUV. went to Colorado to drive it, and they said, hey, we're going to go off-road. And I was like, all right, fine. And so I anticipated the Palisade off-road adventure, where we went on. It was mostly just, you know, a nice dirt road.
Just a little
dirt
road. We drove around.
There was a puppy we saw.
We did see a puppy. He was so cute.
We all saw that puppy, and it was a nice little drive. We were like, all right. And then I drove it around wherever we were at. North Carolina? Yeah.
It was a Carolina. I'm going with North Carolina. Okay.
Yeah, I'm
going
to say it was North Carolina. We drove around North Carolina. Delightful rain. It also was raining like crazy when I was there. And so that's what I anticipated with the EQS SUV.
Yes.
Which is, if you're looking for, if you like the EQS, you're going to like the EQS SUV because A, I think the design language looks better on an SUV than it does on a sedan. I feel the sedan still feels, I think people are like, it looks like a Camry. I think that sort of making it a little taller and wider, that sort of bubbly look that they're using for the EQs, looks nicer on an SUV. Whether or not you think that's true or not is up to you. It still has the standard 10 degrees of rear steering, which, you know, in a big vehicle, I drove the EQS, the regular sedan, around for a week. And after that week, I have determined that every large vehicle needs rear steering. it's a game changer. Like, oh my gosh. Like, you could do, yeah, no, it's great. And it's great in the SUV. It's wonderful. And then we're like, hey, we're going off-roading. And I drove all the way up to the middle of nowhere. And then we did proper off-rolling, like wheels in the air.
Wow.
Like, we had to do like super tight turns. Like, we had a person in the vehicle with us to make sure we didn't get stuck in a mud bog at any point.
It was raining.
I don't know what the deal is with me and rain. I wish I could bring it back to California. I drove the 450 plus, the 454 Matic, and the 584 Matic. And they started at $104,000 for the 450 plus, which is sort of the rear-wheel drive. And then the 4 Matic is 107. And then the 580 is $126,000. That's the starting price. And I'm just going to say, just get the middle one. 450, 4Matic. You're going to be fine. It drives really well. It still feels like a Mercedes. It does actual proper off-roading. Again, we wheels in the air. And that rear wheel steering was so great because there was this really tight turn. And the gentleman that was with me, the co-driver, who was like, okay, everyone thinks you're not being able to make it, you can make it. He's like, just wait till you turn and then turn here. And I was like, oh, okay, whatever. And then when we got to it, when I actually saw what we had to do, I'm like, oh, I don't think we're gonna make it. And we made it.
Well, you know, this is the thing about media drives. You know, they have gone through every inch of that off-road route. They know if it's gonna make it or not. If they tell you it's gonna make it, it's gonna make it.
You know, but then they tell you it's going to make it, but you know, like sometimes it feels like
your margin of error
is very small, and you're like, should my tire decide to slip one half inch on this rock? Smack! I'm going to hit a rock. Like
there's a lot of that. That's why there's someone else in the car.
But they also make sure that, you know, if there are puddles, you know, visible puddles, you know, that you know, if there's any risk of it getting stuck, you know, they are not going to take you down that trail. They're going to take you somewhere else.
They tend to take you places where they feel they're pretty certain you're going to get out of it.
Right. Yeah. It's quite different from, you know, doing this on your own in the real world after you've bought the vehicle.
And it had different tires, different tires than the one we were driving than the regular. So we got into different EQSs. But you know, we were going over rocks. I was really quite impressed with how well the vehicle. So if you live in Alaska or Montana and you're a fancy individual and you were like, you know what? I want an EQS. I want an electric Mercedes-Benz. I'm going to charge it on my ranch. I have solar panels and, you know, I have all these things. I'm off the grid because society's going to collapse. I have like all my prepper stuff and I still want to be able to get off of my ranch. I still want to be able to go, you know, get things. I'll throw some different, you know, some better tires on here and I can do it in my EQ. I can do it and be very comfortable.
Although I would suggest that, you know, if you're in Alaska, you might want to hold off for a while before you select an electric SUV like that. You know, while it's certainly capable, you know, charging is still pretty limited in Alaska. And, you know,
there's people, they don't go anywhere. Yeah. They stay in there. I'm talking about preppers. That's why.
Oh, okay.
You stay in your town, you get some stuff, you order your supplies from the local grocer, and then you're ready for the apocalypse. So as you're ready for the apocalypse, the EQS SUV, it's the nicer.
That should be. I feel like that's marketing. EQS SUV ready for the apocalypse.
in style, in luxury in style, because you can't. You know what? If society collapses, you know, oh, we got gas engine. Hey, guess what? Gas goes bad. You're gonna have a refinery at your house? No, but you're gonna have solar panels at your house.
I was gonna say, where are you gonna get solar panels? You're gonna solar charge your EQS SUV.
Yep. And you have wind. You can throw some windmills. I mean, people have all the, you know, the prepper. They know what they're doing. So we took it off road. It did a great job, far more impressive than I anticipated. On road, it just felt like, you know, an EQS that was an SUV, very comfortable, very, very luxurious.
Very Mercedes. Well.
The 580, you know, it's quick, but again, I don't think you need the 580. I think the 450 4MATIC is the one for the price point. Yes, you can go faster in the 580, mm-hmm. but it's a Mercedes SUV. It's the EQS. Where are you going? There is a third row, and I'm pretty sure what I was told back in the day at some other event was that it was for people 5'4 and shorter.
Yeah, because like, I'm looking at a profile shot of the EQS SUV right now. And
they say it's fine, but the one thing about Mercedes is they just tell you exactly like, oh, don't put tall people back there. Like other places, like, well, you know, the Mercedes is very much like, no,
don't even try it. We're not going to lie to you. Don't.
This
do
is
it.
The size of the human you can put in the back of the vehicle. So I didn't bother trying to get into. I don't really bother getting.
I
into
think
the
you should try.
Anymore.
I think that would be like our golf club measurement. How hunched just, over is Robbie in that? How,
like what degree of is my spine twisted?
What are the chances he's going to need a chiropractor on a scale of 1 to 10?
I don't even think that, do they have a third row one? I didn't see one there. They had a bunch of them. And again, the getting into the third row thing for the lulls is not my jam anymore because I'm old and
I just don't want to bother.
It's just like, and it's a picture that I never use. It's just like, oh, I don't fit in the third row. Yeah, we knew that.
Yeah. Anybody who knows you knows that.
Yeah, everyone who's buying a third row vehicle, unless they're getting like a, you know, the Navigator or something like that, they know. Yeah. They know that it's like, okay, I'm buying this thing with a third row. It's for like a toddler. Or every, you know, the time I have to drive across town with like a bunch of my friends and I put the shortest ones back there and we're only driving 5 miles, they're not going to have a good time, but we all get the same, take the same.
And then the number of times, really, you're right. The number of times an OEM will say, oh, you know, our third row is really accessible and you can really get back there. I'm like, well, I appreciate that the second row slides forward. You still have to be a toddler or under 5 feet tall to actually sit back there and be comfortable.
Unless it's a Jeep Wagoneer L.
Well, the Jeep Wagoneer L is like two cars.
You throw
in
L in
it's
there.
It's gigantic.
I feel like if you throw the word L in any, not the word, but the letter L in anything, that third row better be proper. There better be people who 5'9". You should 5'9" should be comfortable at the back, and anything with an L in the name. It's you know, it goes off road. I'm really looking forward to the G Wagon, the electric G Wagon, when that shows up, because that's going to be for real off road, which no one will do like a regular G Wagon. No one takes a G Wagon off road.
Do they do that when they do G Wagons? You get to test those out off road. I've like only driven a G Wagon for about 30 seconds.
I've never driven a G Wagon. Every time I tell a Mercedes Benz that, they're like, "What are you talking about? Why haven't you?" I'm like, "Well, it just hasn't come up." They're like, "We're going to get one in the fleet," and then it hasn't shown up yet.
We had one.
They're
for
like,
the
"We
Ramble.
Swear we're going to get you one." They keep telling me they're going to get me one. I just haven't got. I need to get into one just for the sake of the electric G Wagons coming at some point.
We had one up here for the Ragtop Ramble over the summer, and I drove it like halfway to, like, for a couple hours or so. I'm like, "This is fantastic." I had a very short drive in it. I had the most beautiful headrest of magic situation. They were the most comfy.
Did they have the puffy headrest?
Oh, they were super puffy. It was like,
I don't like the puffy headrest.
Oh, I liked it. It was beautiful. You're wrong, Robbie. It was the most wonderful thing. But that was
my neck is wrong, apparently.
It's because you're a giant.
Well, I have a really big head. I have a really, like, I think we already talked about it. It's like the small torso, like long gangly arms and legs, and then just giant head.
Well, I loved it. I thought that the pillowy headrest thing.
If you were to draw a stick figure of Robbie, you would just have like a point with like four arms, two legs coming out, and a head on the top.
Giant head.
No torso. Head.
I don't know if my torso is shorter, and I don't really know. I've never actually measured it, but I'm just assuming just because my arms and legs are so long and floppy. I'm like the thing, you know, with the car.
The crazy man,
the dancing crazy man. That's what my arms are. They're just flopping around.
Well, as an example, I don't know if either of you know Jim McCraw, veteran auto writer. He's semi-retired these days, but back in 2008, when BMW launched the original X6, we were both on that program, and the two of us got into the back seat of the X6, and Jim is like 6'3", 6'4". Mm. He's about your height, Robbie, and I'm 5'10", 5'11", and we get in there. And my head was rubbing against the ceiling, and Jim had like at least a couple inches of clearance in there, because he had proportions more like yours, so shorter torso, long legs and arms. So it was that's a good example of how different people's bodies are, and why you should always, before you buy something, especially if you're going to spend big bucks on it, but before you buy, at least, ideally you want to drive it, but at the very least sit in it. And make sure you actually fit, and get in and out a few times, and make sure you're not going to be knocking your head or your knees or anything, and in ways that are going to really irritate you after a week of ownership.
And I add to that, if you're a parent that has kids and you're looking at any SUV or minivan or sedan or whatever, take the car seats to the dealership with you. And if they're like, "Oh, your car seats are icky, we don't want it in the car," don't buy the car. Like, find a way to put the car seats in. See what it's like, put your kids in them, make sure that your kids, like, make sure it works. You'd be surprised sometimes how once you get the car home, it's like, this is murder trying to get a car seat in here. This doesn't fit the way I thought. This doesn't work the way I thought.
It's a door, like the rear door, if it doesn't open enough. It's, like, if it doesn't open enough for like a regular person, like, "Oh, this is fine, I can still get in and out." But if you're trying to get a kid in and out of there, and
like the door, if the entry is narrow, like, and you're trying to wedge yourself in there and put the kids in. And parents, seriously, like, if you
got a
probably
diaper bag,
like, you've got all this stuff. It's not easy to wrangle a toddler into a car. And I say that as someone who hasn't had a toddler in many years, but I have like traumatizing memories of trying to squish them in. Make sure you can get your kids in the car. Sit in the car, dang it.
All right. Well, I already mentioned another big SUV that Nicole and I drove recently. Let's talk about that next.
Okay.
The Jeep Wagoneer L. And we went to Montana to drive this thing in Bozeman. And we even got to spend some time with Jim Morrison, the head of Jeep North America, and got some crumble cookies with Jim.
It was the first time he'd ever been to Crumble, and that man has a sweet tooth. I don't know how this has eluded him all these years, but
it was your idea to hijack him, and
it was.
And Mrs. Morrison was there because they were there for their wedding anniversary the week before, and she really appreciated that Jim came back. He came back with a little late, but came back with a bunch of cookies, and she was very appreciative of that. So what did you think of the Wagoneer L?
You know, I feel like the Wagoneer and the Grand Wagoneer in general are for a very specific audience. You know, that over the top luxury car. They're huge. They're big. They have all the features. There's something very grand about them. The L makes it even bigger. Yes, exactly. Like they're just giant. They're everything. And then 12 inches longer when you make the L, and most of that, I believe, is in the cargo area. I don't think it does.
It's split. I think it's about 4 inches in the rear, in the third row seat area, and then 8 inches in the cargo area.
So, yeah, so you get a little bit more third row. You get a lot of additional cargo room. If you're someone who has a large family and you're often carrying a lot of stuff, I think the L is a great option. Like if you were trying to decide between the two, like I'm getting a Grand Wagoneer. Well, I have three kids. I don't normally have a lot of stuff. I just want this giant car. Fine. I have four kids or I have five kids. I'm often carrying a lot of people with me and a lot of stuff. That extra cargo room can make a big difference if you're camping or doing something, or even if you have kids who are really involved in sports and you're carrying a lot of sports equipment in the back of the car. Great idea. I don't think for most people you need the L. And I also, the biggest drawback to it, let's take the fact that these are not inexpensive vehicles off the table because they are pricey. If you're already looking at that kind of budget, they're difficult to park in normal parking spaces. Now there's all sorts of features and there's cameras and all these things to help you park, but they are big. So you will find even when you're smack between the lines, you still don't have a lot of clearance in either side, which means if you do have kids getting out of the car, you're going to wonk the cars next to you with the doors all the time. So that's like literally the big drawback. They're wide, they're long. Like I was pulled all the way into a spot. My nose couldn't have been any further in because I was, right up against the grill of the car that I was pulling straight into. It still sticks out a pretty good bit in the back, So it has sort of truck-ish dimensions to it, which is something you either like or you don't like. I happen to really like the Wagoneer and Grand Wagoneer. And if I was looking for a long wheelbase variant, I would have no hesitation getting these as a long wheelbase, because the other piece of the puzzle with these guys is that if you want to go off-road, but much like the Mercedes G-Wagon, don't know that you're gonna, but you can. Like there is some genuine off-road capability in these that you're not going to find like in a Navigator or an Escalade or something like that. So I like it. It's just big.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, we noticed this last year when we drove the regular non-L Wagoneer out of Manhattan. The Wagoneer is 4 inches wider than a Ford Expedition and 2.5 inches wider than the GM SUVs, the Tahoe and Yukon and Suburban. So I mean it was already wide, and it's longer. It was about 3 or 4 inches longer than the corresponding standard wheelbase versions of the Ford and GM models. And now the L is also longer than the Suburban and the extended length versions of the others. So yeah, it is a big beast of a vehicle. And certainly the sensors and the electronics help, but that only goes so far, when you simply cannot fit it into a parking space. The sensors
19
aren't
19 feet long.
Yeah.
It's a
big beast of a vehicle. The other thing that's that's new for the 2023 model year, that's launching with the Wagoneer L, but is also available on the standard Wagoneers, is the new Hurricane inline 6-cylinder engine.
Which are great. I like those.
And that was a big part of why we wanted to drive these. So the base Wagoneer L, you get the standard Hurricane. So this is a 3-liter twin turbocharged inline six. It's based on the architecture of the 2-liter turbo that they've had in the Alfa Romeo, Stelvio and Giulia, and in some of the Wrangler and some of the other Jeeps for a couple of years now, basically adding a couple more cylinders on there. And then, so you get 420 horsepower in that base version. And then there's the Hurricane 510, which you get in the Grand Wagoneers, which, appropriately enough, makes 510 horsepower, hence the name. And this is something I told Jim Morrison when we were riding together. It's like the engine feels great, but driving so many EVs lately, I've been spoiled. Yeah, even with 510 horsepower and almost as much torque, as many foot-pounds of torque, it didn't feel exceptionally. I mean, it is quick, but it doesn't feel it. You don't have that instantaneous thrust that you get with an electric powertrain, and it almost felt a little disappointing.
Well, I would have to agree with you, Sam. Like this. it's, if you're comparing this to other gas engines, if you try and take your head mm-hmm. out of the EV engine thing, or the EV, no engine, the EV motors, the electric vehicles, it's great. But you, the more we drive electrics, and like having been in an EV, I'm driving that GV60 for the last week, driving that for a week and seeing how just it's so responsive. You hit the gas and you hit the accelerator and you go. I mean, you just go. There's no hesitation. It is such strong acceleration. It is, it, there's, it's not like it's, there's a performance focus specifically in this car, but man, does it perform. Then you go to these really powerful gas engines and suddenly they don't feel like they felt 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. And it's something that I think if you haven't driven an EV or spent some time in an EV, you're probably not going to notice. But as EVs are becoming a bigger and bigger thing, these really powerful engines that are gas suddenly don't feel like they did. But like that said, comparing this to gas, I think it's good. As soon as you compare it to an EV, then things kind of go sideways.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Having driven, you know, the Lightning, the F-150 Lightning, and, you know, the Hummer, which is even, you know, at least wider and heavier than the Wagoneer, you really notice that difference in the perceived performance of it. So it's going to be really interesting in a couple of years when Jeep does launch an electric version of the Wagoneer to see what that feels like.
I can't wait to drive that.
Yeah.
I got to say, I can't wait to start driving some EV, fully EV Jeeps. That'll be cool. That'll be a neat thing to see.
But, you know, this thing is, you know, surprisingly quiet, very little wind noise. Road noise was really, even as we were riding along on a gravel road for several miles, you know, with Jim, you know, and recording that interview as we're going along, you were driving, you know, the amount of road noise that came through was surprisingly muted. So it was, you know, it's a very impressive vehicle.
Right, it's a nice, smooth, quiet ride, mm-hmm. nice, responsive engine. You get the extra room. I mean, I think it's a good, I think for the person who wants that, it's for who wants a responsive vehicle and you want the L, if you want all that extra space, go for it. It's just, it's a narrow range of people who want that. But for those looking for it, I like this. I think it's a good option. I love that. And I just love that you can get this big beast of a vehicle and it does have that capability. Not so much that I think I'd be off-roading in something this big, but if I did have something like this, it would be really nice to think like the next Blizzard that we have, I'm not going to be stuck. Like, you know, in this great big heavy beast of a vehicle, you can probably still get through that giant snowbank at the end of your driveway and get out if you need to get out. I like that.
All right. We did, as I said, we did record an interview with Jim Morrison, head of Jeep North America. And I'm going to drop that in here. So have a listen. It's about 23 minutes or so. And then we'll be right back to finish a couple other stories and answer some questions.
So Wagoneer is a sub-brand for Jeep. How do you kind of see that playing out? And the way I've kind of interpreted it, correct me if I'm wrong, is kind of like, you know, you've got Land Rover and they've got Range Rover,
which is pretty cool. You know, to be out of the marketplace really, you know, over 30 years since we've been selling in this segment, to come back and get to number two and then, you know, be the top of the game from the overall appeal, which means their customers are looking at us. They think it's, you know, a good choice. I would argue that everybody's looking for the best choice, and to be on top, it's pretty cool. So, you know, I think once we get the chips flowing a little bit better and a kind of normal supply of these things available for our customers, I think we'll be able to continue to grow.
Do you see that getting better? Is the supply issue seem to be easing, or is it still a little bit of a battle?
Oh boy. I thought it was going to get easier, you know, last year. I thought it was going to be easier last month. I thought it was going to get easier last week. None of which have come to fruition.
Where have they been coming from? Have they been moving up from Grand Cherokee, Wrangler, and so on? Or what percent, what share of your customers are coming from other brands?
You know, the majority of the customers that we have so far, by far, I mean, you know, 60-70%, depending on the month, are coming from, you know, other brands that have similar like-size vehicles. You know, we are getting some people, you know, that have, you know, a bigger need for an even bigger vehicle than Grand Cherokee, you know, some from Wrangler, But most of them have been from competitive brands. It's been really a lot of incremental business for us and our dealers.
Uh-oh, pause. Brain cramp. What are you going to ask next year? I have fluffy questions. See, I have easy questions. I got softballs. Okay. You got to ask some hard-hitting automotive journalism. That's you.
Okay. So one of the things about this vehicle that we're in right now, this Wagoneer L, is it's the first product with the Hurricane inline six. And I was actually really surprised to hear that Stellantis was developing a new inline six-cylinder engine because, as anyone familiar with engines knows, the inline six is the perfect form factor for an internal combustion engine because of smoothness and capability. But why a new internal combustion engine for Jeep or for Stellantis at this stage, as you're also making a big transition towards electrification?
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with, you know, we've got a great electrification plan where we told the world, you know, we showed them two new all-electric vehicles we're going to have in the marketplace by 2025. We even predicted that, you know, kind of half the sales by that period of time would be all-electric vehicles. And then, but the other half are going to be, you know, gas-powered. And what better way to offer our customers, you know, more fuel efficiency and more power? It's a way to have your cake and eat it, too. I mean, this vehicle, you know, gets 60 and 80 horsepower more than the V8s that it replaced, and it's going to get two or three miles per gallon better, even with that horsepower gain. And you know, that's really, you know, some good stuff. This thing that we're driving in right now, 24 miles per gallon, is pretty incredible given how big it is and how capable it is. These things will also tow 10,000 pounds, so it's a great combination of more efficiency at the same time giving our customers what they want, which is you know, more power and all the capability they expect.
Is that 24 the projected highway fuel economy?
It's the estimated highway fuel economy for a Wagoneer with a Hurricane.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm wondering about when you're talking about the towing, even for off-roading. Do you know what percentage of people actually take? Because you don't really think of off. You think of off-roading the Wrangler.
Yes.
You don't think of doing it in this, but we did. You totally can. What percentage of people actually do that in the Wagoneer, the Grand Wagoneer?
You know, I'll say that 100% of the customers want to know they can, and most won't.
Okay.
Right? Some will do what we just did, which was, you know, I go up to the top of that hill, check on the cows. You know, now we actually went through a bit of a river, and you know, that was kind of cool too. Or get to their favorite fishing spot, like my grandfather did with his best friend and his Grand Wagoneer. You know, I mean, that's how they got to the fishing spot. You know, but most honestly won't go off road. But because it has Jeep heritage and it's part of the Jeep family, we need to make sure they know they've got the best 4x4 system. And whether they need to or they just want to keep their family safe, they know they've got the best.
They've got it anyway.
Like, this is crazy. This Wagoneer, it's got active drive and quad drive. Quad drive, you can actually lift up and drop down one wheel, and it will put 100% of the power, actively manage the torque, and push it around to that one wheel that's got all the power and push it forward. So that means if you're, you know, silly enough to have only one wheel on the ground as you're going through the brook, or, you know, you've got a real slippery situation where you've got ice and snow, customers won't care about all that. They'll just know that when they press the gas, it goes forward.
That makes sense.
You mentioned 10,000 pound towing capability with this SUV, and you know, what we've seen from the electric trucks that are on the market today, they can also, at least, you know, two of the three pickups can also tow 10,000 pounds. But what they can't do is tow 10,000 pounds for a very long distance. And you know, do you think that the ability to tow long distances, you know, at least for now, is still going to be a driver for customers to choose a gas or maybe a plug-in hybrid at some point as an alternative to an electric version of this?
You know, you're absolutely right, Sam. People buy these vehicles, you know, versus a smaller vehicle like a Grand Cherokee or a Wrangler, because they need lots of space for their people and their stuff. you know, and it'll either have, you know, full of kids, you know, going to a soccer tournament, or, you know, full of, hockey gear and stuff. You know, if you're a goalie, a parent, you know, you got one of these things, you know, but if you know, that's why they're buying these things. They often have, you know, big trailers, horse trailers, trailers for their toys, you know, and that's, they don't want any compromise when it comes to that. And the people that are buying these, you know, $60,000, $80,000, or $110,000, you know, Wagoneers and Grand Wagoneers, they've got lots of choice. They don't want to give up what they're doing, you know, because they've got to make a different choice with their powertrain. So we thought it really important to make sure that, you know, the new Hurricanes were able to still do the 10,000 pounds that the previous V8s were able to do. Mm-hmm. And as I think you saw today, it was able to do it with you know, extra fun to spare.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to watch how the market develops over the next several years, you know, especially for the people that do need this kind of capability.
Yes, for sure.
Sorry, we're playing with navigation. In the background, what you can't see is that I'm trying to follow navigation through this teeny little town. I'm about to miss my turn.
I thought that's what you were saying. You wanted to make it go north.
That's exactly what I was saying.
You got it right in front of you.
Yes. We got it.
Yes.
In the cluster.
Oh, I see, but I always look at the infotainment screen. I never use the cluster. I always use the infotainment screen for navigation. I just never look here. I know, you made it so
it's also in the HUD right in front of you.
I have sunglasses on. It's a little hard to see the HUD.
Or it's probably adjusted to the wrong height for you. So it's always fine. Because it'll work with even with polarized.
It does, but it's brighter when you take them off now. It definitely is brighter. Like, I can see it, but it's a little bit brighter. No, I think it's adjusted for Sam, not for Nicole height. So, yeah.
Sorry, Sam, I forgot your question.
Oh, just, you know, it's going to be fascinating to see how the market develops over the next 5-8 years, you know, through the rest of this decade, as we start to get more and more battery electric versions, but also you're going to be introducing plug-in hybrid versions of most of your lineup over the next several years, and to see how that breaks down based on use cases for different customers. You know, those that need to tow maybe opt for a gas or a plug-in hybrid version, and those that, you know, don't necessarily need the long-distance towing capability might go electric.
Yeah, and I think a little bit of fun there, too, is what I said a couple of weeks ago in our Orbite E-Day, which was we're going to have 500 miles combined range, you know, with this electric variant that's coming out in a couple of years. So,
with a battery electric variant of this or a plug-in hybrid?
We didn't say, but
with really an electrified variant.
Yes, all we said was combined range.
Okay. Clarifies, I'm not getting tripped up. We didn't tell you that. Nice try, Sam.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. He lulls you into this small sense. He knew he was asking.
Like, wait.
Don't look back. Don't look back.
So combined range. We probably assume that's going to be a plug-in hybrid, and perhaps paired with this Hurricane engine.
He says nothing. He's silent.
Gotta go. Now, remember when you said you're now over to Nicole. She's had her questions. Her questions were going to be fun. Sam's are getting harder.
Sam's are getting too hard. Yeah, too tough for you.
And you were encouraging it, too. That was the worst thing. So.
That's what I do. I encourage bad behavior. It's my job.
Yeah.
What my fluff question would be was, as you're trying to take a sip of your drink, favorite interior, because I have a favorite interior, the little themed interiors in the Grand Wagoneer. There's one I like the best. What's your favorite?
It is definitely Tupelo.
Tupelo. Which one is that? Is that the sort of honey-colored one?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And I actually like it because that's I call it the Ferrari leather.
Ferrari leather.
Ferrari leather, yeah.
Sort of a caramel color.
That's
leather.
Actually the exact Ferrari color that I got permission from the CEO of Ferrari to use.
You did not. Did you really?
Yes.
So it's the Ferrari color because you were just like, I like the color with it in my car?
Yeah, it was always my favorite color, and it's just cool to say Ferrari.
Okay, no, that's really cool. Yeah. That's a good reason.
Yeah. That was Sergio.
That was Sergio? He was the one who,
he's the CEO for Ferrari.
And would you go Grand Wagoneer or Wagoneer? You're buying one for yourself to haul your horse trailer around.
Yeah, you know what, that's tough. Because,
you have to pick one. On the spot, pick one.
The question there is to have that be a more performance-oriented,
you know.
Tim's done a great job. He's done a great job with the Dodge brand and really defining that customer, and he's got some cool stuff coming for
when I heard Fratsonic exhaust system, it's like, okay.
The name Fratsonic.
You know, that is, you know, that's kind of out there. You know, and, but, you know, I think it fits with the Dodge brand, you know, especially with the kind of vehicles Dodge has been building over the last decade, you know, to have something like that. And then when I actually heard it at the reveal, that was pretty cool. So, you know, be curious to see what you guys do, what pieces of that you use for Jeep. And then for Recon, I guess, well, first of all, you know, just expanding the Jeep, continuing to expand the Jeep brand. Jeep already has more nameplates than, you know, the other three North American brands combined. You know, how big can Jeep get?
Sky's the limit. Because, you know, we keep listening to our customers, and our customers keep telling us what they want us to do with the Jeep brand. But what's really interesting is, as we've stayed true to our form, which is, you know, build really good 4x4s, and, you know, identify with freedom, adventure, authenticity, and passion, more and more of America wants to do that. And before, when you take a look at, you know, I would submit to you the good four-wheel drive systems. You know, and you think back to the way we launched the Grand Cherokee, when I drove it up the lines back, it was up 65 degrees. One of the things that enabled that was the electric powertrain, mm-hmm. right? You can't leave a gas engine at 65 degrees for very long before all the oil doesn't go up and you burn up your gas engine. Well, the electric, it doesn't care.
Right.
It was just happy to deliver the, you know, the power to the ground, and it was able to do that really confidently. So it's nice that we have that kind of next step of 4x4 technology, which is, you know, what people expect from us at Jeep.
Yeah, having driven the Grand Cherokee 4xe earlier this year in Texas on an off-road trail, and then the Wrangler during the Mama Spring Rally on a really muddy off-road trail, you know, that putting it in electric mode is so cool, you know, because you still have all that torque, but the silent, you know, you can just hear everything around you. Is a really interesting experience when you're off-roading.
It is a different dimension that I don't think anybody really, you know, thought of, you know, to that level. But once you drive in complete silence, connect with nature, it is really cool. And you don't want to go back, you know. And when you think of the torque that we deliver through our 4xe Wrangler system, it's 470 pound-feet of torque. You know, to put it in perspective, our best before that was the diesel at 420.
Yeah.
Right? So it's got gobs more torque, and it's instant, and it's quiet. You take the doors off and the top off, and you're just, all you can hear is a little bit of wheels on the rock or wheels on the sand.
Scraping
over
the rock.
Yeah, you hear all the air, the crunch of everything underneath.
And it's just so cool that, you know, it's a great Jeep, but it's really a great experience that, you know, once you've done it in complete quiet, it's a bit of a game changer.
So my husband, which our listener knows, has a 4xe, and someone ducked his Jeep this morning. He got a little rubber duck on his
Jeep. Oh, nice.
He's really excited.
Good.
So he put a picture in the little Duck Jeep New Hampshire forum that we have, and everybody saw the little flap, the little charge port, and people didn't know what the charge port was, and everybody said, are those mirrors that pop out from when you're off-road? They all thought they were pop-out mirrors. That was the thing. So people that are huge Jeep fans still don't even necessarily know that the 4xe is out there yet.
More importantly, I'm stuck on that. I can do that as a mirror. And why didn't I think of that?
Yeah, right? A little pop-out mirror. He actually says, like, you got it. So I'm like, yeah. He's like, you just went boom and popped out the mirror. So when you're off-road, there's your mirrors. And then when you're back, like normal, pop them back.
It takes 5 minutes to put we have a removable mirror.
Yeah.
But it takes 5 minutes to put on.
Yeah. And I should just make a charge port.
Now it just pops out. I can just stick a mirror on that.
See?
Yes, thank you.
There you go. You're welcome.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll send you the $10 for the first five.
Excellent, thank you. Yeah. Perfect, my $10 commission for that.
Yeah. So I didn't forget the question though, because I was so excited about why isn't that a mirror?
Why isn't it a mirror? Wouldn't that be cool if you just like popped in? You had mirrors. That's all. You didn't have to worry about putting stuff in and out, and just tucked right in there, whatever you needed them.
Yep.
So with the Recon, that's a roughly Wrangler sized vehicle. That's going to be electric. I think you kind of hinted at that there's also going to be an electric BEV Wrangler. Do you see those two vehicles potentially cannibalizing each other?
You know, I don't think so. You know, I mean, obviously there's going to be different people that are at different stages drawn to both, but I think if we do it right, we'll be able to, you know, support vehicles and build both, you know, like we did with Wrangler and Gladiator. You know, because we've expanded the scope of having, you know, true pickup truck capability for people that want a Gladiator and, you know, continuing to improve Wrangler, we've actually set records with both Wrangler and Gladiator. So by definition, you know, there's no substitution.
Make each one a little more focused.
Yeah. So, you know, with that same sort of attention and formula applied to Wrangler and Recon, you know, expect to attract more people to the, you know, to the brand. And, you know, some of them might, you know, come in on a Wrangler and decide, hey, I want that Recon. Or come in on a Recon and think, oh, I really want that that Wrangler. So it's nice to have some choice for them. But, you know, like we're seeing with 4xe Wranglers, a lot of a different customer than we have with our normal Wranglers. In fact, two-thirds of those 4xe customers are only seriously cross-shopping other electric vehicles.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, pretty dramatic when you take a look. In fact, it's helping us because it's underwritten the best first half of the year yet for Wrangler, you know, bringing new customers to the brand. And, you know, once they become a Jeep person, you know, you're always a Jeep person, so hopefully we'll keep them around. But, you know, I expect more of that kind of formula applied, Sam, to both Wrangler and the Recon.
On kind of a different tangent from that, talk about cross-shopping, and the dealers have been a challenge when it comes to selling EVs for a lot of automakers. You know, I know somebody who recently was looking for a new SUV to replace the Toyota FJ Cruiser, and they went in, they looked at the Wrangler 4xe. They also looked at a Toyota 4Runner and Land Rover Defender, and they were disappointed in their experience with the Jeep dealer because the Wrangler 4xe had not been charged up. You know, he wanted to. This is somebody who also owns a Tesla,
yes,
and owns two other EVs, owns a Tesla and a BMW i3, and was really hoping to get something electrified. But he was disappointed in the experience he had with the Jeep dealer because the car was, or the Wrangler was not, had not been charged up, and he couldn't get an opportunity to test drive it with an electric mode to see what that experience was like. How are Jeep dealers accepting, or, you know, how are they responding to the shift towards electrification? Are you having any challenge with them, and are you planning anything like some of your competitors are doing, with maybe potentially buying out some dealers that don't want to go down the electric path, or you know, maybe having new dealer agreements that require certain things for selling EVs?
Yeah, no, nothing, you know, really dramatic like that. I mean, we come from the dealer world, and, you know, we've got our dealer partners. Obviously, you know, we continue to train them, and they're doing, you know, well. I mean, with the 4xe, it is America's number one selling plug-in. I'm embarrassed to hear of that challenge you had with your friend. We like to figure out how and make sure that that never happens to another customer. But sometimes, you know, with our Wranglers of late, not to make excuses, but they've been coming and going so fast that my guess is that would probably just got off the truck, you know, and didn't have a chance to even be properly PDI'd and set up. But it's not a good, you know, excuse. I mean, it's making excuses now. There's no excuse for that. But overall, our dealer body is performing very well. In fact, we've recently upgraded them all with Wagoneer, and there's even a select group of certified Wagoneer dealers that have gone through another level of training to make sure that customer experience is number one. And I'm happy to report that that's working. Wagoneer has got the highest customer satisfaction within our dealer channel, and then the whole Jeep brand is the best performing, you know, with that sort of training towards the customer experience, you know, taking it up one extra level. So always room to improve, and lots of room to improve to continue to get to be best in class. But you know, we are focusing on it and trying to make our customers' experiences even better and better.
Nicole?
No, I'm sorry. I'm focusing on the whole driving the car thing. Oh. So I'm occasionally putting a question in if I'm not looking at navigation. Okay. So I have no questions. I have no questions. I hit them with my really tough, fluff questions. So. All right. Yeah. Is that it?
Yeah, I think that's all I've got.
Okay.
Anything else you want to tell us about Jeep that we haven't talked about?
Now he's speechless. I've never heard that in my whole life.
I think you got most of it. I'm trying to think of anything else would get me in trouble. So.
That's it?
Yeah.
That's all she wrote?
Alright.
Okay. That's all we got.
Okay.
Appreciate it.
Oh, that's fine. And, oh, by the way, we did this at 80 miles an hour.
Which is the speed limit here.
In a Wagoneer. Yes. And interesting enough, there is no wind noise in this thing, and there's no engine noise. And one of the things I'm really proud to report, the Hurricane in the Grand Wagoneer is 5 decibels quieter than our previous motor was, so it's pretty cool how quiet this thing is. 5 decibels in an interior is a lot. So, we're having this conversation. I wasn't even probably paying attention to the mic. I should have been.
It's literally sitting on the center console between Jim and I, and Sam is sitting in the back seat. So, it's quiet enough in this car to record this, sounding as good as it does.
And the Hurricane's going to be available in the standard Wagoneers too, not just the L, right?
Correct. And it's standard on the long wheelbase versions, and also available on the shorties.
Yeah.
Great.
Thanks. Thank you, Jim.
Thank you.
All right. we're back. Jim's a very cool guy. We like Jim a lot. I mean, he's Canadian, so, you expect
he
him to be
nice. He
has
to be nice. It's like, he's not allowed to not be nice.
That's right. It's in the it's in the air and the DNA. All right. One more new vehicle for this week, by the time this comes out, the embargo will have lifted, which is the 2024 Chevy Trax. The Trax has been GM's entry-level crossover for 8-9 years now. I think 2013 it came out. It's actually been around quite a while. And this is they did a mid-cycle refresh a few years back, but it's still basically the same as it was, which is kind of a short, stubby looking little crossover. It's not a bad vehicle. I mean, it was, relatively affordable, drove decently, but nothing really special. And this new Trax is really different. What do you think?
It's exactly what you expected. That's there's nothing surprising here. It's following the current their current design language. I think you said it was a little bit bigger, a little bit lower. Everyone is just
actually
slowly,
a lot bigger. It's 11 inches longer than before.
So it's a lot bigger. Everyone is slowly transforming their small SUVs into hatchbacks and wagons, but they're still calling them like crossovers. They're like, we'll just keep doing the thing, but we're not going to say anything. We're going to keep the naming the same, but everything's coming, turning back into a hatchback and a cross in a wagon.
You can't call it a wagon. You can't call anything a wagon, Robbie.
Americans won't buy it if you call it a wagon.
Do not call it a wagon.
Yeah. It's like 14 inch or 11 inches longer, a couple inches wider and 4 inches lower. The roof line is 4 inches lower than before. It still sits up fairly high, but the roof line is lower. But it's got a lot of the design language that you see on the Equinox EV, the Blazer, the Trailblazer. It's actually bigger than the Trailblazer now.
Is it really?
Yeah, it is. It's like 3 or 4 inches longer than Trailblazer. But the Trailblazer is taller. And there's no all-wheel drive available on the new Equinox. It's only front-wheel drive. So this is, and it, it The engine is, instead of the 1.4 liter turbo they had before, it's now 1.2 liter three cylinder. So the same base engine that's in the Trailblazer, 137 horsepower, 162 foot pounds of torque, which should be plenty. You know, driven that in the Trailblazer, it's a nice engine, should do fine. So it'll have a lot more rear seat leg room than before, 3 inches of extra rear seat leg room compared to before. It's also the cheapest Chevy. And in this age of inflation, it's actually the 2023 model, or 2024 is actually going to be $1,400 cheaper than the current Trax base price, $21,495, including delivery charge. Which is pretty impressive. And then the most expensive variant, the Active, or the 2RS and the Active are both $24,995 base price. So five trim levels, all under $25,000 to start. This goes on sale in the spring. They're adding a bunch of driver assist features, as everybody's doing now. Get better infotainment system than before. 8-inch touchscreen standard, 11-inch optional, similar kind of design to what we saw in the Equinox EV, and the Blazer inside. So it should do all right.
The interior, it looks good. I mean, the interior looks good. It's hard to tell, you know, as soon as you're looking at a picture and things look great, then you get to it live and in person, and the textures and the look of it isn't as good. But I mean, if it looks as pretty in the real world as it does in the pictures, it's got a decent interior too.
And to be honest, I like the design, the exterior design of this better than the HRV. The new HRV is a little bland.
Yeah.
This Trax, I think, looks a lot better.
Looks nice.
Yeah. It has a little more personality. Yeah. Yep.
I do like that they put that they have the rear vision camera as standard. You know, the backup camera that you legally have
to
have.
Yeah, everybody's required to have by law.
Right.
I'm like, you don't have to put that in there.
Yeah. And we know, and then you still find things that has something like steering wheel standard. I'm like, really? Standard. That's good. Okay, thanks for that.
Seatbelts, standard. Ooh.
Look at your
airbags,
fancy.
ABS, you got it.
I was looking at it, it's like rear vision camera standard. I'm like, wait, is this just the backup camera, or is this like, you know, they have it in the Cadillac and then the Bolt and a couple other vehicles that, you know, that
fancy that one. View. Yeah.
Yeah, where you look in the rear view mirror and it's a camera. And I did a quick search just to double check. And it's their it's backup. When in reverse, I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah. All right. One more item here. Motional and Uber announced a 10-year deal the other day to deploy Motional's autonomous vehicles on the Uber network, starting with an unknown location before the end of this year. Motional is the joint venture of Hyundai and Aptiv, the automotive supplier. And they've been working together on AVs for a couple of years now. Previously Uber had been trying to develop their own AV system. They had a division called Uber ATG, Advanced Technology Group, which they decided to cancel, and they sold that off, or actually really gave it away to Aurora Innovations. And now they're doing deals to bring other people's AVs to their network. So Motional is going to start deploying their vehicles on the Uber network by the end of the year. Most likely the first location will be Las Vegas, where Motional and its predecessor companies, Aptiv and Delphi, have already been operating these vehicles on the Lyft network since mid 2018. So that's probably where we'll see them start. But Motional's also been operating some of their vehicles with Uber Eats in Santa Monica since early this year. So it's not the first part of the relationship with Uber, but it's growing. And you know, I think Motional is saying that they plan to have driverless operations. They still have safety drivers for now, but they're going to launch driverless operations in 2023 across multiple cities. And so it looks like both Uber and Lyft will be part of that program next year.
Interesting.
That'll be cool.
Especially,
I think it's cool
considering Cruise is like, we're doing a thing, and then we all went down and saw the thing, and then after the thing, a bunch of things happened.
Yeah,
we're like, not doing the thing.
Oh, the cars got stuck.
Change again. Your mind about the thing.
And I understand it's, you know, that's what you have to do. That's learning, but also, you know, I've been in the city where you get stuck behind a cruise vehicle and you're just like, oh no.
Never leaving here ever.
It's like being in a mud pit.
What's that like, Sam?
The mud pit of the march of technology.
Yeah. All right. Little quick follow up on from the last show. We talked about the TFL truck guys, Rob and Micah. They got a Hummer EV and it died on them in traffic. They got it to the dealership. Turns out it required a software update on one of the modules. They did that. They updated the software. Apparently it's all working good now. It's all good for now. Until the next bug.
Until the next thing pops up, and suddenly we have another video from them and now we're stuck for this reason.
Yeah. So it wasn't entirely clear exactly what the root cause of the problem was from the video, but they got it fixed. And it's
they got to figure it out. I guess that's all that matters. And it's working fine now. I didn't have a chance to watch the video. It's all good.
Apparently. Okay. I didn't watch all 43 minutes of it, but at least through the first 10 minutes, it was still running. So
seems like it was working.
Yeah. All right. Let's answer a few questions. First, from Twitter, I'm not even going to try to say his username. He just says, just call him DC. So a couple of questions here from DC. Do you guys have any plans on test driving the Fisker Ocean, and are ceramic coatings worth the money? If not, any alternatives? So,
yes
on the Ocean.
Number one.
As soon as we get the opportunity, yeah, we will absolutely be driving it. Production is supposed to start next month, in Austria, and hopefully in the next couple of months, we'll get our first opportunity to get behind the wheel of the Ocean. And then ceramic coatings. I've never done a ceramic coating on a car. Have either of you?
Are we talking about brakes?
No, I think they're talking about the ceramic coatings that you can put, you know, to as paint finish protectors. I'm assuming that's what he's talking about.
Oh, I thought it was like ceramic paint brakes. Because I was going to say ceramic brakes are great if you race.
Yeah.
And everything else don't. And they squeak.
Yeah.
You buy the best brakes in the world for driving around town that squeak.
Yeah, and those aren't really coated. It's a carbon ceramic composite. Right.
Yeah.
Ceramic
coatings, can't you just get that little plastic thing they put on the cars? Like I get a lot of whenever you get a Porsche or a really nice vehicle where they're trying to keep it, they have this really thin plastic wrap on it on the front that you can't really tell it's there.
If you look closely, you can see the seam. Yeah.
Yeah, you can see the seam. I think those are probably worth the money.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know about the ceramic coatings. I've never had cause to put that on any of my cars. They weren't worth the effort and the money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Lord Cowwow. Convertible.
Is it Cow Wow or Cow Cow?
Cow Cow, sorry. Yes, you're right. Lord Cow Cow.
I'm sorry. We don't want to mess up someone's made up name.
Convertible, T-top, or Targa top? Also, any word on if either of the latter will be coming to the Supra? I mean, I'm a convertible person myself.
I like convert. I've had a convertible.
That would be my choice.
Yeah, convertible. I've driven T-tops and a Targa top. Convertible's just better. And the first time I drove the Supra, my first thought was this should be a convertible.
Yeah. But my guess is we probably will not see a Supra convertible.
I don't think so either.
Because, this was jointly developed with BMW. BMW sells the Z4 on the same architecture. I have a hard time believing Toyota is going to spend the money to engineer a convertible version of the Supra, given the relatively limited sales volumes.
Yeah,
they should make a T-top though, because then
or a Targa. They had a Targa on the fourth gen Supra back in the 90s.
Well, that's true.
Oh, that was a long time
T-tops
ago.
T-tops would just 90s. Feel like you can feel like Smokey and the Bandit and just.
The thing about T-tops, you go back, especially in the 80s and 90s, when they had T-tops, they frequently leaked.
That was the 80s and 90s.
Yeah. I'm anti-T-top because I had this boss once who had a car with a T-top and she was horrible. I hated that human. So now it's I associate with him no.
She had a Del Sol, which was essentially a T-top without the T because it just had the and you slap.
That was more of a Targa, really.
Yeah, it was more of a Target. That's true.
Yeah.
But I wish it had a T. Wait, isn't the Hummer a T-top? Wait.
Hold on. Yes, it is.
I guess
Hummer
EV
is a T-top. So T-tops are back, man.
Yeah. We'll see if they do any more.
Hummer's got it. They're back. They're
wait,
back.
Like, wait, wait, what's a Tita?
All right. Justin asked, are we to believe Elon? And well, I think the answer to your question is right in that first clause. Are we to believe Elon? No. Are we to believe Elon and expect Tesla to deliver the Tesla Semi to Pepsi on December 1st? Do we believe it will be just one truck or several? And if it actually does have the 500 miles of range, just how heavy are the batteries going to weigh?
Oh my gosh, the weight of those batteries.
So
ginormous batteries. It will make the Hummer look like a lightweight little tiny thing.
I'm guessing that the number of trucks that they'll deliver to Pepsi in December, assuming they hit that date, will be in the low single digits. It's not going to be a whole fleet of trucks.
A giant fleet of vehicles.
I also do not believe it will have 500 miles of range, because if you do the math, and as an engineer, I sometimes do the math.
Do the math, because that's what engineers do, the math.
You're going to need somewhere around 15,000 pounds worth of batteries at a minimum to hit 500 miles of range.
Yep.
Which also diminishes the amount of load that you can carry.
Right.
Which is like, load is the whole point of a semi.
Yes. You get paid by how many pounds of freight you can carry. And they're limited in most states to 40 tons, 80,000 pounds. And if you're taking up 15,000 pounds just for the batteries, yeah, that doesn't work so well.
It's like driving around. You've already just tossed a Hummer EV into your into your truck.
A Hummer and a half, actually.
A Hummer and a half.
Yeah.
You have to take into because we're not counting the yeah. Okay, sorry.
Yeah. So, I suspect that they will probably cobble together a small handful of these trucks and put them in a Pepsi fleet for testing. But you know, it'll probably have about 250 to 300 miles of range at most, similar to the other electric semis that are already being delivered by Volvo and Daimler and
Cascadia.
And PACCAR and a couple of other companies, truck companies.
There are already trucks on the road. That's the crazy thing. I've ridden in these trucks.
Yeah.
And in some cases I've driven these big trucks and everyone's like, oh, the Tesla Semi. I'm like, there's already ones out there.
Yeah.
And if you're going to buy it from somewhere, you're going to buy it from an established company that you've been working with for decades, you know, Daimler, which owns Freightliner, Mack, a bunch of other companies. Or are you going to buy it from the one company that has not a great service record?
Little questionable.
If you own a fleet and you know something goes wrong with one of your trucks, you want it to be fixed and back on the road like yesterday,
because you're losing money. If you're not hauling goods with that, you were losing money.
Yeah, you are not going to tolerate waiting 6 weeks for a service appointment or 6 weeks for parts. It's not going to happen.
Right. Yeah, that's when I talked to FedEx about this and BrightDrop, and they were like, it's almost a no brainer because BrightDrop is part of GM. Uh-huh. GM has a huge service network. Like, do I want to invest a bunch of money in vehicles that I know can be serviced, because I need these vehicles on the road all the time? You can't just like, oh, the truck doesn't work, so Phil doesn't get to do his job today. Or do I want to use a startup that may or may not be around in 5 years and doesn't have a service network? And you know,
unless you happen to own that startup, like Amazon mostly does with Rivian.
Right.
yeah, unless you happen to own a startup with Amazon and Rivian. But it's a tough, I mean, you want innovation, you want these startups, but at the same time, when you're looking at, like, especially fleets, they're not there to gamble.
If they're not reliable enough, if the reliability isn't sort of guaranteed, and if the service isn't guaranteed, sort of if they aren't reliable, you can get them fixed. A business can't afford that. I mean, that'll just sink you if you can't get the goods that need to be shipped to wherever they need to be.
Yep.
Yeah, it's a tough sell on that end.
All right. Last one from UMass to UCR. Yes, what 2023 EV SUVs will have vehicle to home capability? So, you know, this is, you know, bi-directional charging capability, like what you've got with the Lightning right now, where, you know, the you can run your house off the battery in the vehicle. There's actually going to be probably quite a few. The Volvo EX90 and the Polestar 3 are going to have it.
Yeah.
Did Nissan say anything about if they're going to include that in the Ariya? Because
I don't want to say they don't. I don't remember that being a part of things, but I don't want to say no, Sam, because I don't know for sure.
But Leaf does, because CHAdeMO just supports it forever.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And GM is going to be supporting this on EVs that have their high output 19.2 kilowatt onboard charger. That will actually be a bi-directional charger. And actually this week, GM is announcing the formation of another new business unit called GM Energy that is going to offer stationary storage batteries. So for both home and for commercial applications. So things like Tesla Powerwalls, and it'll also have fleet management stuff for managing fleet charging, but also, you know, you'll be able to manage your home charging, and do things like, you know, set it up for automatic power backup if your power goes out, things like that. So that's part of a new business unit GM starting.
ID Buzz.
The ID Buzz is going to have it. Trying to think.
Hyundai.
Hyundai's got vehicle to load. It's pretty limited. It's like 1.9 kilowatts.
I think they're holding off until they launch Hyundai Home,
yeah,
which is their whole like energy system.
Yeah, I think
it's,
so.
It's I've been sort of hassling them about that for like a few months. So I'm trying to get like right before it comes out, I'll probably have a nice feature about it. But until then,
yeah. And I think the, you know, when the Ioniq 7 and the Kia EV9, they're bigger, they're three row SUVs,
yeah,
come out
do it.
Later next year, early 24, they'll probably have bigger batteries and have higher output vehicle to home capability.
Yeah.
So there will be a bunch of options available.
I think they're increasingly going to do it. I think it's just going to take a little bit of time to roll it out, but it's going to become the norm pretty quick.
Yeah.
That's one of the, I mean, there's a few reasons why I really like the ID Buzz. It's a van. I like vans. Put the dogs in it. We can go camping. You can do all these things. But I like the idea that it's probably not going to be the main vehicle we're driving every day. So while it's at home, it's just a, you know, it's just the battery for my house.
Yeah.
So that's one of the selling points for me, is having a, you know, future EVs charging, you know, charging up at night or charging up with the sun, and then discharging when, you know, during peak hours, or discharging in the middle of the night, and just sort of saving some cash.
Yep.
All about saving cash.
Saving money.
Cheap man.
All right. And with that, we'll call it a show and talk to you next time. Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.